This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Eric McClain joins us. And Eric McClain.
That's guys, right. Guys, look, do we have a date when you're back in studio together yet? Do we have a date on this? Because I miss the banter without the delay getting back together. Come on.
Let me tell you, I think we've now done more shows with not in the same room
separate
as we have together.
Correct.
Is that right? That's probably accurate, isn't it?
That is correct.
Yeah. Hey. Listen, I'm keeping the seat warm, Mac. If Meg could give you a shot here, camera three, I'm keeping I'm actually in Wes's chair, but I'm keeping my seat warm over there. Right there it is. Keeping the seat warm.
I love it. I love it. It's ready. It's ready for him.
I mean, whoever wants to show up in the basement, man, come on. I've had both shots. The dogs, you bring treats for the dogs. They're not going to bother you. I ain't got no COVID.
That's right.
COVID doesn't come rolling into my house. I got no COVID. I'm good. Wes, are you ready to conduct this interview?
Eric,
let's go.
Number one, yeah, it's great. It's great to see you. First of all, we know Trevor's going to go first. Who else are we looking for here? I know there appears to be a bit of a run on Christian Darrisaw here in the last 4 or 5 days. He's kind of inching up these mock drafts I was watching and reading over the last few days.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see who's going to be the number two prospect for the ACC. Is it going to be Christian Darrisaw? Is it going to be Jalen Phillips? And like you, I've seen it leaning towards Christian Darrisaw lately in these last couple of days, which, of course, means nothing. You feel like these guys in their draft boards, their war rooms, they kind of have who they're taking, and we decide, to bring up different names or to float different names out there. But it's not a bad pick. And when you look at Christian, what he's able to do as a player, very nimble for being such a large human, a guy who is going to be a starter at left tackle probably day one. I've seen a lot where, the Chargers are looking to take him. And, man, what a great addition that would be, protecting Justin Herbert's blind side. Again, a guy who moves well in space. He's just a big athlete. We've done a couple of tapes of him over the years, and the most impressive part is when he's pulling or running out in space, and you're like, man, 300 plus and 6'5 plus isn't supposed to look like that out in space and downfield, but he does a great job and, really just can't wait to see where he ends up.
I asked this question to Wes in hour number one. I'm going to throw this one on you too, Eric. Over and under, first round tonight, ACC players, Notre Dame does not count. They're an independent. I'm putting the number at five. Are you going over or under ACC players in the first round if I give you the number at five?
I'd like to say over. I think there's going to be a couple of guys that could sneak into that bottom half of the first round. And when you look at, running back, obviously going to be a big question mark. I think that there's been some late push for the running back position. And really, I think there are three that are way different than the rest. I think when you look at, obviously, Travis Etienne, when you look at Najee Harris and Javonte Williams from North Carolina, it's kind of those three and then everybody else. And maybe it's not too far away with Michael Carter, but really I think that those are the guys. So if someone trades up and takes like Travis, which we've seen some buzz about early, I think those other two are going to follow very quickly, which that is kind of your sixth pick maybe in Javonte Williams. So it's going to be very interesting to see, again, running backs. There's been years where running backs aren't taken until, midway through the second round. If we possibly had three in the first, I think they're deservingly so. I mean, these are three running backs that are going to be tremendous in the NFL. That could be the push, Pack, to get us over that five number.
All right, Eric, I want to follow up with that. We're talking about late runs and Darrisaw in particular, the running back situation. Another place that's gotten warm here in the last couple of days is defensive ends, and you knew that because everybody was killing how light the draft was a week ago. So as we got closer, then all of a sudden it starts to bubble up. That means Phillips, Basham, Weaver, Patrick Jones. I mean, those are the names that I think will be the first handful of guys coming off from the ACC at defensive end.
Yeah, and Gregory Rousseau. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see where do scouts put him? Where do these guys draft him? A guy who I really wish, you know, would have played this last season, but he made the decision that he felt was best for him and his family. And, you know, it's all going to work out. It's all going to be fine. He's going to be a guy that is a fantastic player. It just depends on system and where do you want to put him? You know, it's so funny to hear, you know, these folks that have never played the game of football say, well, all of his sacks are team sacks. I didn't see anybody else tackling the quarterback but him when he makes these plays. And you saw, you know, back in 2019, the special season that he had and really took college football by storm, almost 20 tackles for loss as a redshirt freshman. And he's still a baby. He's still learning how to play the position of defensive line, not just defensive end. A guy who, you know, again, played wide receiver in high school. So it's I think when you look at him and Phillips, obviously I'm going to compare the two Miami defensive ends. I think Jalen Phillips is ready now. Like, he could start on your team now. But I think in 10 years, Gregory Rousseau is going to be a perennial all-pro. I mean, he just has so much more room to grow and to develop of who he is. But I will say about Phillips, man, if you know, these injuries, these medical red flags weren't popping up, I don't think there's any question that he is the number one defensive end. And really, he still might be. You know, I think that he's that special of a player. It's just going to come down to what's the risk and what's the reward. You know, do we trust, as an NFL franchise, do we trust our medical evals to where, okay, all that stuff that happened in the past with concussions and you know, whether he was allowed to play or not allowed to play, that it's crazy all the stuff that comes up and, you know, you don't know what's true and what's not. But is it worth the risk in drafting him? Same thing with Caleb Farley. I think Jalen Phillips and Caleb Farley are two guys that should be number one at their position, but because of these medical evals and because of a back thing with Farley, which is scary, if you're thinking about paying this guy $30 million and then he never plays, which I'm not saying that's going to happen, it's just a risk that are you willing to take? But again, I think those two guys are number one at their position, you know, kind of thinking that they'll be healthy and ready to go.
Eric, Wes and I were talking about Weaver and Boogie Basham in our number one. Crystal ball, what do you think their upside will be playing on Sundays in terms of their career?
Yeah, you know, I think with Boogie primarily, it's going to be about fit again. And I know I just said that with Rousseau, but he's a guy, I mean, 6'3", 270 pounds, and runs a 4.6. I mean, he's out there running faster 40s than Sage Surratt. And so he is a freaky guy. And it's not just, okay, let's look at his numbers, let's look at his size, and let's project what he can do. He has the numbers. He has the production. And as a guy that, you know, has just proven that he has a knack for getting to the ball in the backfield and a knack for making plays. So, you know, if he's in a 3-4 system defensive end, I don't know if he can transition to that outside linebacker type guy just because of how big he is. But if he slides into 3 technique, I mean, look out. I couldn't imagine as a guard, you know, having to go against somebody that freaky, that athletic, and that skilled. And then similar for, you know, Rashad Weaver, a guy who, you know, really a lot of people I feel like forgot about, you know, the season that he had a couple of years ago because of his injury, came back this year, had a really fantastic year. He is a strong, fast defensive end, a guy that is going to be that true strong defensive end on the right side of the line of scrimmage, a guy who is going to set the post well, defend the run, but also has an elite combination of pass moves. So I have seen, Pack, those guys really be interchangeable with who's drafting them, whose mock round am I looking at. And I've seen them in the first round a couple of times. So again, it's this draft in particular, you know, I feel like is something that, you know, we have our lists, we have our charts, and it could all be backwards and way different from before. So it's always a fun night and really just can't wait to see the entire draft this evening.
Eric, it's interesting when we talk about these defensive ends, and this is not the only year we're going to be doing this as it relates to the ACC, because you know we got young guys that are fire breathers too that are still coming, right? That'll be eligible next year and the year
That's
after.
Right.
The 4-2-5 is about become the base principle of just about every NFL team. So in the case of a Basham or a Weaver or a Patrick Jones or however this spells out, you know, that triggers a comfort level for those guys. Here's a guy I'm going to give you, and I know we don't have video on him, but I'm going to ask you about him. I think the 4-2-5 may lead to a very interesting opportunity for Chas Surratt because of his skill set as a linebacker. Because you're looking for that almost big nickel, if you will, sometimes if you're a certain NFL team. I think a guy like Surratt, who I don't know that will go in the first three rounds, it's going to be an interesting ride for him to find an NFL home this year.
No, there's no question. And again, you know, with Chas and how the transition that he made from quarterback to linebacker, I mean, you don't see that often.
Right.
And you definitely don't see it often where it's so successful. And, you know, I think for whatever reason, some folks questioning, can he be an inside linebacker? Can he, you know, handle the physicality when those big offensive linemen get on him? Which maybe that's a little unproven. But when you see the way he plays and you see the tenacity that he plays with and the physicality, again, we've shown many a clip where he is meeting running backs in the hole on fourth and one and getting a tackle for loss. He is absorbing contact, shedding contact, and making plays. And then the most, you know, I think attractive part of his game outside of, you know, cerebrally being able to see things and anticipate what's going to happen is just his athletic ability. I mean, the guy can run sideline to sideline. He has a knack for finding the ball. And by the way, he's the best pass rushing linebacker in this class. That's not just my opinion. That is a fact. And when you look at his numbers and his, you know, sack rate and his pressure rate, he has a knack for timing up the snap, getting back to the backfield, and finding the quarterback. The biggest thing, Wes, for Chas, and it's nothing that he can do outside of playing the position more, is just his instincts. And those are going to develop because, again, he's played this position for 2 years now. He's going to develop. He's going to get better. And I think the future is very bright for him.
By the way, totally separate note before we let you go. You'll probably have to be in Bristol, Connecticut the first weekend of September. So can I have your parking spot and your two tickets to the Clemson-Georgia game? Because you're probably not going to be able to use those.
let me just tell you something. We better be in Charlotte, North Carolina in the first weekend of September. That's all I'm going to say.
Listen, I have no control over how the huddle does its business here on ACC Network. I am just assuming all of you are going to be in Bristol for the entire Labor Day week. With that said, I do expect your two tickets and that parking pass here at Bank of America Stadium because somebody's going to have to use those seats.
You've got it. If I'm not here, you've got it.
All right. We got that on. We got that taped. All right. Right. We got that on record.
Just want to make sure.
That's it. You got it.
Good. Yeah. Hey, wait a second. Let me finish this by saying he said you could have the tickets, but he didn't say you could have them complimentary. So there we go. We move right along. Eric, thank you.
That's right.
I can handle it. I can handle the comma. I can handle that
always
comma.
Always fun being with you guys. Know, thank you so much.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
It's a Thursday. Many thanks to Eric McClain. More great guests coming your way. And also an appearance by the Lumberjacks because it's time for a little true or false brought to you by Dish. And we go up to Bristol, Connecticut, home of the smart people. It's where they run the radio affiliates.
There he is.
Production, everything else. Here he is, voice of victory. And sure enough.
Voice.
That's right.
Is that a V, Wes?
It's like a it is the voice of victory.
The right. Whataburger logo. What was going on there? All right. Victory, what's happening?
Whataburger would be more like that, wouldn't it?
Oh, there he is. There's
true.
Your W.
Yeah. Whataburger would be more like that.
You got it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Good
true.
Work.
True.
Wu-Tang.
Yeah. All right. Hit it. Let's go.
All right, guys. First one, true or false, of course, presented by Dish. Notre Dame, the only baseball team in the ACC to have not dropped a series in conference play this season, Pack.
True, that's true.
That is true. Mm-hmm. They have three conference series left at Carolina versus Florida State and at Virginia Tech.
All those are true. Well,
those are all true.
True.
Mm-hmm. But true or false, the Irish will finish the regular season without dropping a series in conference play.
That would be false. That would be false.
Yeah, that's false.
I love the way they're playing baseball, but you know what? Whoa. At some point in time, they're going to lose two or three to somebody. I'm just nature of the beast. But they have been a great, not good, great college baseball story this year.
Anything to add, Wes?
No question. No, he's right. I'm all about. I don't think they'll win every series. I do believe that. The other thing I see in the situation is they are, if in my opinion, and I know I think you said this the other day, Aaron Fitz said, they're, if not the best story, one of the best stories in all of college baseball this year, Pack, right? I mean, it's just, it's been unbelievable the job Link Jarrett's done.
We've got, in this particular conference, has two teams that have been a national story in baseball. One is Notre Dame, the other one is Pittsburgh. Yep. And they have been remarkable. They're top 20. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame's now in the top 10. And all they do is win. Two out of three. They just grind it. And the rally to win the series against Boston College over the weekend, another testament that they just don't stop playing, man. They are a good, solid baseball team. No question.
On the softball side, four teams currently have a team ERA under two, Pack.
That's true.
Yeah, Notre Dame flirting with the number as well. They're at 2.29. True or false, there will be five ACC teams that finish the season with a Gibson-esque sub-2 ERA.
I appreciate the Gibson reference, but the answer would be false on that. False.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I'm going to agree false. False. I mean, those four are solid, but they're more than likely one goes over two rather than another one joins them under two.
That's where I was going to go. I think I don't know if the question should be five. I think the question is, will it be four? Because I'm not sure it'll stay at four. I mean, listen, the ladies score now.
Right.
Unless, you know, Cagle and Richard are pitching, then you're going to be lucky to get a hit.
I mean, the ladies score other than those five teams.
No, I hear you. And listen,
it's the opponent.
A voice of victory. It's not us asking you the question. It's you ask us the question, victory. You get that? what else we got?
Tuesday, we asked you a question, which you got right. True.
True.
When you said that chalk would prevail in the first round of the women's lacrosse tournament. Now we're going to re-rack that question. Will it be chalk again in the semifinals of the women's lacrosse tournament?
False.
Ooh.
False. Chalk stops Friday in Chapel Hill. That should be the headline. Chalk stops Friday, West Durham. Okay.
Wow. All right. Chalk stops Friday, huh?
That's what I think.
I'm going to say true. I'm going to say the two top seeds will again advance.
Don't think so.
Pack, would you care to venture a guess as to where the upset comes?
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you where the upset is, victory. It's going to be, unfortunately, a lack of victory. I think BC, I just think Syracuse, and listen, nine yesterday, a nine spot. Kearney's out. BC's got Charlotte North. All they do is score. I think BC's going to beat Syracuse. It's going to be my guess, and I emphasize the word guess. I think North Carolina is obviously the team to beat.
All right.
They're spectacular. I think we're going to have a North Carolina-BC final. It'll be my guess on that one.
All right. In case you guys hadn't heard, tonight is the NFL draft. True.
True.
Widely anticipated that Trevor Lawrence will be the top overall pick. True. But true or false, the Jaguars will draft one of Trevor's offensive teammates at some point in this year's draft to play alongside Lawrence.
False. False.
Oh, no, wait a second.
Let me say it a third time, that'd be false.
Another offensive player.
So could Amari Rodgers.
I'm going to say true. I'm going to say true. Cornell Powell.
Could be Jackson Carmen late round. I'm going to just say false. Just, hey, there's 31 other teams picking. So I'm just going to say that the odds, I'll go against it. And Jags will be happy with Clemson's version of quarterback and say, hey, you know what? We'll go down the road here. We'll see. Who knows? That's why you watch it.
Okay. All right. I think they will take one. I think they'll take Cornell Powell. That's just me.
Be a great story, man.
How about
that? The way Cornell Powell worked his last year, he is an easy guy to root for. in the draft this weekend. I hope he
has. I agree with that.
I just hope he gets a chance because the dude has worked. He committed and worked. None of this transfer portal. None of this, hey, there's 10 great wide receivers. I'm out of here. He worked. I admire that in this day and age. Good for him.
All right, guys. The NCAA field hockey tournament begins tomorrow with North Carolina awaiting its opponent. It'll either be Miami of Ohio or Stanford. Keep in mind, the Heels' last four games have all gone to overtime, with the Heels winning all four. True or false, UNC's first-round matchup will also go to OT.
False. Blowout. False. Blowout. Aaron Mattson, Coach Shelton, the ladies have it together. No overtime in round one. No way.
Yeah.
No way.
There you go.
You also wouldn't have thought that their game against Wake
Forest. But you know what? Somebody on here thought Wake Forest would score more than one goal in the true and false, which was turned out to be true. Trust me. North Carolina's field hockey team's got it figured out. They'll be okay. First matchup. No doubt.
Yep. All right. Last question. I like the last question.
Last one.
There's another one?
We're still looking for an official
sports book. Hurry up. The draft starts tonight. You want to get this done before the draft.
True. We're looking for an official sports book.
True.
Where you can bet on this. Haven't found one yet, but we can make it a true or false. Hidden Stash, the horse partially owned by Syracuse's Jim Boeheim, will finish dead last.
No. False. False. We got six horses at 50-1. I will take the risk that Hidden Stash is not holding up the proceedings at the end of the race. No way it finishes last.
I'm going true.
West Durham, come on. We got 20 horses in the race.
Hidden Stash finished last.
Hidden Stash finishes 20th.
Hidden Stash finishes last.
I'll take all of that you want.
Yeah. Okay.
There's no way.
We'll let Drew Brooks tell us more tomorrow.
A Jim Boeheim coached and owned horse finishing last. No way.
He said they would finish last.
He's wrong.
He's the one that said it would finish last.
He's pulling the old Lou Holtz trick. He's just downplaying it. He knows he's got something for everybody. Might finish 18th, but they're not finishing 20th.
All right. Well, I'm going last. And we'll get more Derby information tomorrow.
Mark the tape
Plus,
for that.
Plus, a special for treat Monday. For those of you that watch tomorrow. Special treat for tomorrow.
Monday show.
A lot of you did not see the Q Series last year.
Oh, the Q Series was great. it's a good one.
It was.
By the way, I want that tape marked for Monday when we get back together, assuming ESPN hasn't postponed the show or canceled it.
I'm not going to be here Monday, but
where are you going? You on vacation again? What are you doing?
No, I have an event. Oh. I committed to the event.
I have an event, and so therefore you would have to be a sidebar there, Packer.
I'm going to look at property. Just kidding.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Okay, just a reminder, tomorrow we go back to the archives a little bit. A little Q Series rerun. Perfect timing given the festivities that are at hand at one particular Commonwealth this year. You can connect the dots, and if you missed it last year, you'll get a kick out of it this year because it will never, ever go out of style as long as we're still employed here at the Worldwide Leader. That's the way that works. for folks right. who are like, what is let's, Packer talking about?
Let's go back to the
just
triangle.
Just watch tomorrow.
Right. You'll see it. Just watch tomorrow. Let's go to the Triangle of North Carolina. Christine Halfpenny is the head women's lacrosse coach at Notre Dame. They won a grinder yesterday against Duke. She's good enough to spend a few minutes with us on an off day. Coach, congratulations on the win. Welcome to the program. And the ACC's Women's Lacrosse Championship, which, as we expected, was going to be hotly contested.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So yesterday, just a normal day at the office, right? 17-16, hold on for dear life. Let's just run out the clock if we can. I mean, it's just amazing. And we say this, I've always had a dollar every time we've said it. It doesn't matter if it's a men's match, a women's match. Lacrosse in this league is so good and so competitive and so athletic and physical and high scoring. It's just awesome television. But as a coach, Christine, you got to be going crazy in some respects, isn't it? I mean, nothing ever seems easy in this league.
Yeah, nothing is given. Nothing's easy. And every single team from top to bottom in the ACC competes. Fantastic athletes. And no one goes away. No one. No one mails it in. We knew that going in. And these have all been, you know, I guess as fans call them, thrillers, as coaches call them, you know, 60 full minute games. So we were ready for that. We didn't come out of halftime thinking that it was going to be easy next 30 minutes. We actually went in saying like 0-0 and we got to finish this thing to the end. Fortunately, we did have a 5-goal spot there heading into the second half.
I want to ask you, I want to go back a little bit here in the, I mean, you grew up in the ACC footprint, so to speak, and went to school at Virginia Tech. You played women's lacrosse. I mean, you've now kind of seen the evolution of this sport come full circle in the league where, I mean, you know, and I'll be honest, Coach, we talked about it. We think there's a possibility there could be 4 ACC teams in the national finals, which would be an unbelievable accomplishment for the league, let alone for those individual schools. Just how much has this sport, you know, progressed in the last 20 years to where we are now?
Yeah, it's exponential. I think the speed of the game is one of the biggest pieces. You know, I think that women's lacrosse has become bigger, faster, stronger, and the rules of the game have evolved, you know, and kind of revolutionized the game just with boundaries, restraining lines, the possession clock. The possession clock was huge. Just like you said, we were running it out at the end with 35 seconds left as opposed to playing stall ball when we had a 5-goal lead at the halftime break. So it's exciting. I think that we continue to be one of the fastest growing sports in the country for a reason, because it's so exciting. The momentum shifts, the runs that both teams have are just awesome. And like we say to our players, you know, kind of the sky's the limit. You can be so creative. A full day of ACC lacrosse, we just showcased the best of the best yesterday, from the first game all the way to the end. They were all incredibly competitive and a lot of creativity using all of our athletic ability. It's really, really cool to see the exponential growth in the last 20 years since I played.
So you get a chance to chill and grill today for the most part. And then tomorrow it's North Carolina. Man, I'll tell you what, you saw them in the rain in South Bend. You had them on the ropes. It was another great thriller, right? Thriller from a fan's perspective. What did you do in that matchup that you said, you know what, we had success here? Again, North Carolina's a terrific team. And what do you have to do tomorrow where you say, you know what, one extra goal, one extra play, one extra pass, whatever it may be, what is it that gets Notre Dame over North Carolina tomorrow, high noon in Chapel Hill?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that we know we need to do better in game 2 is win the draw. The draw control is everything. And we actually got blown out on it in round 1, which we got beat 16-6 on the draw. We made up for it in ground balls. So to your point, one more play. And that's what we did yesterday. It was, you know, down the stretch, we needed one stop. We needed one draw. We needed one goal. And so looking ahead to round 2 of North Carolina, we like how we were able to limit the big two. You know, I think the dynamic duo on Carolina, you can't hide from it, is Hogue and Ortega. And if we can limit what they do and keep the rest of their offensive unit in check, we feel like we can be very successful. But we're going to have to find flow on offense against their stout 1v1 defense. We both play more man, more man-to-man style defenses. And so it is going to be finding flow on our offense, getting the ball through as many of our players' hands as possible, like we did against Duke. You know, having 11 people in the scoring column is very important. And then, like I said, keeping their offensive crew in check, because they're incredibly deep as well. And so we're going to have to play great team defense and limit their high percentage looks and give Bridget the saves she wants to make.
Christine, how much do you buy in tournament momentum? I mean, games like you had yesterday can be really interesting sparks, right? I mean, Matty Howe has a game winner for you, but it's also got a carryover effect. I mean, I've talked to some coaches that would hate to have an off day today. They'd want to get back out and play today just to keep momentum. How are you with that concept with this particular Notre Dame team?
Yeah. You know, definitely momentum. I think that we're riding momentum from last week right into this week, where we're just starting to hit the level of consistency that we want to see at this time of the year. So we're going to ride that momentum that we had from yesterday, but we also believe in high performance needs high recovery. So today is a huge recovery day for us while we just keep our culture chatter up. You know, we keep talking about the good things. We know that yesterday's game was preparation for tomorrow. So there's a ton of buy-in on that with our team, and that's really what we rely on. And we're prepared to recover at a high, high level today so that we can come out of the gates strong, because starting fast will be very important again. That's another key to the game against Carolina.
Coach, what kind of input have you had on these unbelievable celebrations after each goal? What kind of input do you have there? Or do you get completely out of the way?
Well, if you know, it's part of our culture. Everybody matters. It doesn't matter how many playing minutes you have on our team every day. Everybody's putting the same sweat equity, blood, sweat, and tears into all of the practice days throughout the year, the 132 days we're allowed by the NCAA, plus all of the, you know, 8-hour weeks. So come game day, we need it all. And actually, I give a lot of credit to our leaders that have carried this through for us, because they tell the sidelines, hey, look, you're the ones that got us ready for this. And when you're celebrating on the sideline, it empowers us and it reminds us that we're doing the right things and that we just need that one play, next play. So I don't know if the cameras ever catch me. Sometimes I turn around and I tell them, like, let's go. They need to hear you. That was a big stop. You know, we just limited that 1v1 of their number one player. But I had no idea what was going on behind me yesterday. I was so locked in. I got to watch the rollback on ACC Network last night. And it's just great. I mean, it really just is what everyone sees. That is our culture live.
All right. With that said, we just ran the highlight reel of multiple exhibitions. Do you have a favorite, or do you have one you'd like to suggest to the team?
You know, Notre Dame's all about tradition. Good. I got to tell you, the push-ups.
Push-ups, yeah, of course. Right. Got the leprechaun touchdown. Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. Wow. I tell you what, we are looking forward to the semifinals tomorrow. Congratulations on a great win yesterday. Look forward to seeing you in the national tournament as well. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Coach.
You bet. Christine Halfpenny, the head women's lacrosse coach at Notre Dame. They're a fun group to watch and a grinding group now. Matty Howe, sensational yesterday, the game winner to beat Duke. Be fun game tomorrow, Pack. I mean, you think about Carolina, Notre Dame, the one goal game in the rain at South Bend. They're really, really interesting. Don't forget, we've got baseball. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, the way North Carolina just runs past people and have obliterated them, you know what? Notre Dame's not going to be afraid of that. Notre Dame's going to go, hey, you know what? Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Right. The first one. That's why tomorrow noon, right here, ACC Network, that will be a showdown. That will be a great test. That'll be a lot of fun. Both those matches tomorrow going to be good. All chalk.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
John Wildhack is back.
Yes, sir.
Top of the hour. He will tie Dan Radakovich for athletic director appearances on Packer and Durham. It's a Wildhack Radakovich showdown. I looked it up this morning at 3 a.m. And John hasn't been on in a while. He's always informative. I love having him on because he's really, really informative with what's going on. But you're going to have John Wildhack and Dan Radakovich at a half dozen. That's your ACC athletic director leaderboard on Packer and Durham. All right, there you go. All right, let's go around the league.
Cup two here starts the 8:45.
Dude, let me tell you something.
Got cup two ready here.
You got a full. You got two jobs today, so you pace yourself, big man. All right, you pace yourself. All right.
Well, we're going to roll the videotape. Let's roll the videotape. Virginia, NCAA women's soccer action. Right. Ready? Here we go. Virginia. We were getting ready to roll it. Here it is, SIU Edwardsville. Cavaliers win 3-1 in the opening round. They'll get the 12th seed, BYU, on Saturday. Boom. Virginia just banging them in from everywhere. There you go. Thank you. 3-1 rally, the final.
Had to rally.
Congratulations.
Had to rally there.
To the Cavaliers.
Down 1-0. Rallied with three goals. You mentioned BYU on Saturday. By the way, Friday, that would be tomorrow. North Carolina's got Denver. Clemson's got Rutgers. Then Saturday, Duke against Arizona State. There will be rooting interest. There will be rooting interest back in Bristol, Connecticut with that one. And Florida State's got Milwaukee. Why do they play Milwaukee, Wes? Why does Florida State play Milwaukee?
Because they beat Elon 1-0 in a very – Milwaukee upset Elon 1-0. Very controversial goal, as I understand it.
Like a drum.
That's right. No, they didn't. It was 1-0.
Blew them out. Ran them out of the building.
No, they didn't. No. 1-0. I'm saying it was a controversial goal. It may or may not have been. All right, there we go.
You need to give more money to the school. Straighten out that soccer problem you got there at Elon.
Soccer problem. We don't have a soccer problem.
Yeah, you did yesterday. All right, here we go. When Milwaukee looked at you,
ACC.
You did.
Yeah, well. All right, thanks. We'll move on. ACC basketball. The first of the players, and then this is probably not a surprise, but it is of note. Moses Wright, the ACC Player of the Year, announced last night on Instagram his intention to stay in the draft. This gets a little in the weeds here. Decision does not preclude him from returning to Georgia Tech if not selected. The feeling is he's going to be selected. Is he a first-round player? That's the question. Is he bottom of the first, top of the second? We'll get to the mock drafts of the NBA later. We don't have time for that right now. But here's the note David Teal produced. 13th consecutive year, the ACC Men's Basketball Player of the Year will not return the next season. Man, it shows you, number one, as you've always said, how fortunate we've been and how good the talent has been. Number two, though, it opens up a door to 21-22 where the unknown pack is starting to become the dominant thinking of what ACC basketball might be. The portal, the transfers, the changing in coaches at certain places, all of a sudden, I don't know that we've got a real handle on what our expectations for ACC basketball are going to be next year.
What did I tell you about 3 weeks ago? I'm assuming everybody is gone in the transfer portal. Let me know in October what your roster looks like. It is too hard to keep up. I mean, really, it's nuts. But I will tell you, Wes, as you sit here in late April, as a fan of the Atlantic Coast Conference, I am a little concerned about men's basketball. I am. It's a transitional time in the league. I get all that. It's a traditional time, a transitional situation in terms of all of college athletics. But there have been a lot of players who have departed, and they're gone. They've already landed in other locales. And I don't know what a rookie freshman class is going to look like. That is a total unknown. They may be terrific. They may be just okay. I don't know.
Right.
But on the surface, and this is coming off a year in which people looked at the ACC, well, it's kind of down in men's basketball. I don't know what we have. I really have no feel whatsoever of who's good, who's bad, who's got work to do. Everybody, I guess, has work to do. But it's a weird time right now, to be completely transparent and honest.
Yeah.
It is a weird time for ACC basketball where you just assume, oh, they'll roll the ball out. We'll have four teams in the top 10. We'll have this. It doesn't feel that way to me in late April. It doesn't. Now, there's plenty of time for it to change between now and the rosters, and everybody shows up in October, November, and we go to work and start playing. But I don't ever remember a time in my adult life where I have felt as edgy about ACC men's basketball than I do right now. Right now. I don't know how good it's going to be. I really have no clue.
Yeah. I think it's a very fair statement to make, and you're right. If we were to just look at the transfer list, right, you would see, and I think that's where some of this is coming from. You look at that transfer list, and you see the number of players that have left this league, and again, freedom of movement, we don't talk about it on the floor of the field. We're talking about it in terms of the basketball transactions. The freedom of movement is alive and well in college basketball. People are going everywhere. But I think you're right. Right now, you just don't have any kind of – you don't have an invested confidence in what you're going to see. Now, it could turn out that the freshmen come in here, the transfer players, you know, whether it be, as Hubert Davis said last week, the youngster from Oklahoma or the kid from Virginia who's gone to the Carolina program, Casey Morsell who's gone to NC State from Virginia. The interconference transfer is interesting. You got guys that are coming into the league from other Power Five leagues, things of that nature. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how kind of all this plays out. To me, it invites an unknown we've never seen in ACC basketball. How much does it open the door for other schools to make that jump? I think that's really interesting. And I'll follow with this, Pac. In the case of like a Jose Alvarado who's still deciding, you know Jordan Usher's already coming back to Georgia Tech. Schools like that, you got a feel for who they're bringing back, but how does that transition piece work? It's going to be interesting, I think, really, to see kind of how all this plays out next winter.
You know, we just got finished with the men's basketball season, which produced something that's never happened in ACC history. And that was, we did not have a first team, a second team, or a third team All-American. Yep. Did not have one. And we've had a number of names, folks that you follow, and you go, that guy's a good player. He's gone. He's gone to the NBA, or he transferred out. Like I said, it's April the 29th. Right. A lot is going to change between now and when everybody gets together in the fall. But on the surface, if I said to you, hey, who do you think the best team in the conference is today? How would you answer that question?
Oh, God.
I mean, how would you answer?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think you can answer the question. And that's my point.
Right.
I don't know how you would even start
good point.
To answer.
Before we get to John Wildhack, congratulations to one of our – and look, we got a lot of favorites on this show. This is really one of our favorites. Number 9, Elliot Avent, who yesterday was named the head baseball coach of Team USA. So congratulations to Elliot. He will handle the U.S. Baseball Collegiate National Team, better known as Team USA. Packer has already asked for some swag.
I did.
Off Team USA. I mean, you didn't waste any time, by the way.
As soon as,
congratulations. Where's my shirt? Where's my hat?
As soon as I read that yesterday, I sent Elliot a text, and I said, first of all, congratulations leading Team America. And I said, if we don't have any red, white, and blue USA stuff in the basement, we have whiffed on that. And so he's on it. So Elliot Avent, again, leading America. Yeah. Elliot Avent, America's manager.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.